Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, June 20th, 2021. Today on the program, we have, of course, wrestling television viewership to review. We have wrestling live event ticket sales to review. We have the wrestling Patreon industry, a $2 million plus industry. WWE stock has burst back to reality. AEW is lagging on Facebook. There's a Forbes article on Tony Khan with plenty of interesting information, including about the profitability or lack thereof of All Elite Wrestling. All that today and more. But first, and now, joining us from my South by Southeast, the Buffalo Blue Jays' very own, the comedian, ring announcer, entertainer, entrepreneur, gardener, kitchen cleaner. Chris Gold joins us from South Buffalo to discuss the week's events. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, we have kind of the opposite effect of normal weeks. I did not take a nap this morning, early afternoon. I will mostly be taking a nap later after this. I got a little bit of a late start today due to working a live demonstration seminar yesterday, getting home late, so...
Where was your live demonstration seminar?
It was at the Oakdale Mall in Johnson City,
New Bingham, just outside Binghamton.
Yeah.
Yes. How was that entertainment affair? Did you do you practiced your ring announcing skills?
It was nice to get some reps in, you know. Nice to get some reps in. But hey, there is a restaurant across the street that makes a vegan Cuban, and it is phenomenal.
Really? Across the street from the mall.
Yeah. It's called Food and Fire.
I hit the wrestling ropes. I took a couple back bumps too this week for the first time.
Ooh, I saw the ropes March on Twitter. I didn't see the back bumps.
2020. Yeah, I because I didn't want to make people think that it was because of the bumps, because I really do believe it's just I took some flip bumps and I took some back bumps, but I think what really did it was running full speed on the ropes. Not that many times, but full speed. Back and forth, like reps of 5 to 10 a few times. I think I'm back to normal today. So we can resume on Monday, perhaps.
New York State's open for wrestling. Now we'll see if Brandon Thurston is.
Is that what people have concluded based on the latest rulings from New York State?
Yeah, there's been multiple shows to be announced now. So,
okay. I heard, is ESW now officially running a show?
Yes, July 31st.
You found a venue.
I found the date. It was a long search.
Yes. ESW's never run at Riverworks before.
No.
Not on its own anyway. As in partnership, perhaps, with others. It's ambiguous. But yeah. We'll see when I wrestle. Another thing I wanted to talk about is... What is the name of this spreadsheet that we use to track the wrestling ratings that we give access to patrons. The name of this document.
You mean the viewership spreadsheet?
The WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, yes.
Yeah, the WrestleNomics viewership
spreadsheet. Say that three times
fast. The WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. The WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. And
You're saying it too slowly.
The WrestleNomics. Yeah, see that?
My point is, I feel like this needs a rebranding. Maybe the WrestleNomics ratings something. I don't know. It just feels like a mouthful. But anyway,
the WrestleNomics ratings tracker.
Subscribers get. Yeah, maybe. Is that more marketable? Tracker. Because spreadsheet sounds mundane and something like somebody at work makes you do.
Well, yeah. in my day job, they call our spreadsheets trackers. So
tracker. Yeah. The word spreadsheet itself is a tongue twister.
Report card too. That is what we call some things. The ratings report card.
But this is a data set. This is big stuff. This is not just a table. Oh no. This is I wonder how many kilobytes, megabytes this document is. You can't tell because it's a Google sheet.
It would crash any Dell laptop that was made at least 5 years ago or before for how much information it has.
Is that a description of your laptop?
My old laptop, yes.
Okay. But you have acquired a laptop just for your expedition.
Yeah, as the co-host. This laptop is just for podcasting. I'd really hardly use it for anything else.
Okay. I've been scraping more. I have been scraping Cage Match as of last night. I'm having some issues with it this morning. I let it run all night. I was trying to scrape all of the results. Take a guess. How many events does Cage Match have in its database?
Oh, I mean, I would say 2 million.
2 million events, not matches, events.
Because it goes back to the '70s with some of the territory stuff. Like if you look up Terry Funk,
it goes back for years. So. They've got stuff from the '30s.
I'm thinking all the indie shows all across the globe. I'm going to say 2 million. I know that's a crazy number, but
it's over 300,000.
See, that just seems to me light.
I think that's, I don't know, but I would guess that that's bigger than wrestling data, but
internet wrestling database. Yeah. I've found is even more detailed in certain things. When I do the research for this day in independent wrestling history, they sometimes have more than Cage Match does.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm doing that. I've had in the past, we've had Matt Schroeder, who did the WrestleNomics 500 list. He has scraped Cage Match and wrestling data and shared some of that as well, shared that information with me in the past. Trying to do it. I think he was using R, though. I'm using Python, just different programming languages. And I let it run all night last night, or I tried to. And I managed to scrape about 12,000 events, pulling the match out of each one. I have like a progress thing that prints to the screen as it goes. I'm about 2% in. So this will be an ongoing work. But that's all I have, I think, for this week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye. No, if you want to take the driver's seat.
Yeah, we'll get right into it. And why don't we start with that, whatever you want to call it, the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet track or whatever, kind of talk about viewership as I'll be kind of reading off on that. We will start with the June 11th SmackDown, which did 1,944,000, which was a little bit of an uptick on overall, but a little bit of a drop in 18 to 49. It did a 0.48 compared to the 0.51. The week before. We did not have a new biography this week. I'm not sure if they're done or they took a break because of the 2 hour most running treasures.
They're done. I believe that's the end.
But most, because there is another, at least, I know there's at least one other most wanted treasures tonight. And I don't know if there's any more after that.
Oh, that's right. No, there's Ric Flair tonight. They're not done with the Most Wanted Treasures yet, but they are, I believe they are done with biographies.
So, but let's talk about Most Wanted Treasures. And I was honestly shocked that they aired the episode, probably because it was Andre the Giant memorabilia, but it was featuring Mark Henry and the Big Show. And it did.
You can't let that content
go to waste. 487,000 overall with a 0.19 in the 18-49. I mean, on a Sunday, I'm not sure if they were going. I mean, they were, it's going against TakeOver. So.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of these have gone against pay-per-views or TakeOvers. Tonight's will be going against Hell in a Cell.
That's true.
Part of which we already saw on Friday night. Well, some people saw it. Quickly, let's talk about the let's talk about SmackDown now.
Yeah.
SmackDown is always in a weird spot in relation to this podcast because it happened on Friday. We have an overnight number, and we just talked about last week's final number, the overnight number, 1.926 million. So about 1.9 million viewers is the overnight number. The overnight number always comes in a couple hundred thousand lower than the final number. I would guess that's just due to, I think the overnight consists of major markets and extrapolates them onto the population. And maybe wrestling is just disproportionately popular in non-major markets or something. I don't know. But anyway, that's the highest overnight since May 7th. So I'd expect this to be the highest viewership since May 7th. That would make, in all likelihood, this is the first time that SmackDown has hit 2 million viewers in over a month. Probably, but we'll get that final number probably on Monday. But they decided to put what tell us about this.
So summarize. We got very short notice that they were moving the Hell in a Cell match between Rey Mysterio and Roman Reigns from the Hell in a Cell named event on Peacock to this week's Friday Night SmackDown.
You know, in the linguistic world of the world of World Wrestling Entertainment, it is important to distinguish the Royal Rumble match from the Royal Rumble pay-per-view or event, the Hell in a Cell match from the Hell in a Cell event, the Money in the Bank match from the Money in the Bank event. Just like pronouns, you can't just be vague like that. People, or at least one person, gets upset. So I was speculating that maybe, you know, SmackDown ratings have kind of been slipping lately. Not that you don't necessarily expect that. It's May. It's going against the playoffs at times, the NBA playoffs. But ratings haven't been great lately. And maybe Fox is sitting here thinking, well, you're building up what's happening on SmackDown lately. Well, they're building up this match between Roman Reigns and Rey Mysterio. And that's going to happen not on our TV, not on our show, but on Peacock, that NBC Universal, one of our competitors owns. And maybe WWE faced some pressure from Fox to put that match that they're building up on SmackDown rather than on somebody else's property. I speculated that on Twitter. And I've had a couple people tell me, who should know better than I do, that that's probably not what happened, or at least they believe that that's not what happened. You know, when it comes to the whims of Vince McMahon, who knows why anything in that company happens creatively. So, yeah.
I can't think of any other reason why. It doesn't make any sense.
Maybe Vince decided he wanted to do a cage match before they do their MMA cage match, on which AEW did a MMA style match that night on Dynamite between Jake Hager and Wardlow.
Wardlow. Yeah.
Which I saw, I didn't see it, but I saw clips of it. It looked, dude, the way they shot it, exactly like a UFC or other pro MMA match would be shot, which was very interesting, I thought.
I thought it was cool, and it's something different. But they're trying to get an audience that's very popular. But yeah, nonetheless, yeah, that I mean, obviously it helped with the overnight. We'll see with the overall, but you're thinking over two. Mm-hmm. I mean, is this something where, see, the problem is then if you start favoring Fox with this, then Peacock goes, well, NBC Universal goes, wait, we paid us for Peacock to put you on Peacock, and now you're not putting Caliber. I mean, because let's just face it, of the current active stars, Roman Reigns is the biggest star in world wrestling entertainment.
The leader in Google web search among those who actually appear on TV.
And when you pull those searches, you notice that nostalgia acts normally pop up in the top 10, top 15. Rey Mysterio is one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, so these are arguably probably your two biggest stars, and you just pull them off, you know, of Peacock. I mean, how now, like, okay, you piece Fox, but now what's, you know, NBC Universal going to think, like?
Well, according to Andrew Zarian from the Matt Men podcast, which is part of the Observer F4W site, he says that NBC Universal is not happy about this decision, which would make sense. Fox has one of the free streaming services, right? Is it Tubi? Tubi? Is that theirs? Anyway.
I know they put a lot of stuff on it, like Next Day on Hulu, and then they have their own Fox, but you really have to have a cable provider to watch, which is weird because
Fox doesn't even own a piece of Hulu anymore. I believe it's NBCU and Disney's partnership alone now, but they used to, and SmackDown is still on Hulu. However that works out, I don't know, but there it is. Fox is probably getting some licensing fee or something.
Well, yeah, because like I remember watching, I don't know how long ago they didn't own a piece, but like I'd watch Gotham the next day on Hulu on Fox, and that ended like a year or 2 years ago. So, but all right, so we will move on till WWE Raw, which on this Monday did 1.7, a little over 1.7 million. With a 0.49 and 18 to 49. And if you do the comparison from May 24th, we got a bump over 4 weeks where that did 1.6 and a 0.45 and 18 to 49. So this Raw did a bump. Was it the Eva Marie return that did it?
And what's Piper Niven's new name? How's it pronounced?
Nobody really knows, but I'm assuming it's Dewdrop.
Okay. No, I think I would categorize this as a normal rating for Raw, even though on a week-to-week basis, the wrestling news headlines will say up. This is after a number of weeks where it was down. Or was it down? No, this is actually the fifth, I think the third consecutive week when it was up. But anyway, in one of the tabs on the viewership spreadsheet, See how hard that is to say? On one of the tabs on the spreadsheet, there's a report where you can see what I sometimes call the WrestleNomics normal rating or the WrestleNomics O-meter, which takes the total audience, the 18 to 49 audience, the 18 to 34 audience, and I do a median of the given episode compared to the viewership of the given episode compared to the median of the last 4 weeks. And then I take the median of that of those three deltas and say, all right, what's the median delta here? How above or below expectations was this? And this is like barely above normal for Raw. And in fact, all of the numbers that we now have final numbers for among the five in-ring programs that we follow here, four out of five, except for Impact, are nearly at a zero for normalcy, basically meaning, yeah, this was a very normal number. Impact will be slightly down because they had pretty big drops in their younger audience in the key demos. But anyway.
Move on to NXT, which saw the return of Samoa Joe. Did 695,000 with a 0.19 and 18.49. If you compare that to last week on June 8th, 670,000 with a 0.19 and 18.49. So not much of a difference there.
But now we have granularity. Here's a little known fact here. In the Showbiz Daily era, we would only be talking about these demo ratings, which are now going to, well, I guess SpoilerTV.com is still reporting demo ratings. But we're so fixated on these demo ratings that I'm not sure how much they are actually relied upon in the TV industry overall. But certainly Nielsen is delivering them. If we were still in the Showbiz Daily era, and we would only know that it was 0.19, and we would say, oh, no difference, exact same as last week, because this week did 0.19 for NXT, last week did 0.19. But because I have P1849 actual viewership counts, we know that the audience was 10,000 people smaller in 1849. So now that comes up as down 4%. Just to give you an idea of how easy it is to overanalyze.
Well, yeah, because, you know, being based on the overall number, because they had an uptick, that's why it doesn't seem like there's a drop. I'm just saying it's a 0.19. Did you get what I said there? Oh, so yeah, so that's the thing. If you just heard 0.19, oh, they're, you know, not much of a difference. But as you pointed out there, and as you could see, there was more overall viewers with that, you know, that 50 yes. and plus and probably, you know, under 18 viewership group. So most likely 50 plus, though.
Yeah. Most likely. Yes. As we'll talk about later, the median age among all the wrestling programs, in fact, that we follow, not just the in-ring programs, all of them. NXT, the oldest of all. Even in this Tuesday night era.
So speaking of AEW, a little Friday Night Dynamite, this is the rating from June 11th, which did 487,000 with a 0.19 in 1849 with 244,000 overall in that group. And if you look at from June 4th, 460,000 with a 0.19 as well, but that was 247,000 in the 1849. So once again, a little bit upticking overall, but the 1849 dropped.
Yeah, this was better than last week, but not as good as their first Friday, which was the Friday before they did the pay-per-view. We're looking at what, about half, a little over half of the normal Wednesday night audience. This coming week, Dynamite is on Saturday. I wonder how the audience is going to recover once they do return to Wednesdays. Is there going to be is the viewership going to be down when they return to Wednesday versus their normal spot when they were last on Wednesday? Something we'll look at in July, I guess. But people have been talking about, well, I don't know. I've been talking about to what degree does this give us an idea of how AEW Rampage is going to be when that program debuts on TNT in August 13th or something, which will move to TBS in 2022, along with Dynamite. But if you're going to look at this, you have to look at just the first hour, because Rampage is going to be a one-hour program that runs from 10 to 11. Okay, and the first hour of these Dynamite episodes is running from 10 to 11. So what's the average viewership? We get the quarter hours, of course, because the Observer has the quarter hours. So the quarter hours average just for the first hour for this week and last week are closer to the same. Actually, let's see here. The average total audience for hour one on May 28th, 587,000. Following week, 495. The following week, 547. That's total audience. Total audience doesn't matter, though. Key viewership or key demo, that's the only thing that matters. And those, the 3 weeks have averaged 291, 251 and 273. I think this is not, these are not the numbers that Rampage is going to do. I think Rampage is going to do a step under this by 5-10%, something like that, because I think it's optimistic to imagine that this is where this is the A show right now that people are gravitating to. By the time Rampage goes on the air, it's going to be the third hour of AEW that you're asking people to watch during the week. Tony Khan can say what he wants to on Busted Open about how there is no B show and they're both A shows, A and A, or whatever he wants to say about how, you know, they're not going to treat this like a B show. Dynamite is going to be perceived as the A show. Dynamite is the show that is in the far better time slot. Dynamite is the show that is 2 hours long versus the 1 hour that Rampage will be. And Dynamite came first. So I think by the time, consider all that, and then by the time you ask people to watch a third hour, maybe then they, you know, they've already had their fix of AEW or of wrestling in general at that point. And I think it's going to do a step under this. I don't think you can compare the A show to what the B show is going to do in terms of even though it's the same time slot. So I would predict mid 400,000s in total viewership, low to mid 200,000s in 18 to 49. That would be my guess.
All right. All right. So we'll move on to a friendly promotion of AEW Impact Wrestling. Thursday, June 17th, they did 111,000 overall with a 0.03 in the 18 to 49 compared to the week before, 120,000 with a 0.05 in the 18 to 49. And the 18 to 49, it's interesting because they did 39,000 overall in that this week compared to the 60,000 on June 10th.
Not going against Dark Side of the Ring this week for the first time since that season started. But no,
the China documentary on Vice, which you can find those ratings on the WrestleNomics Patreon spreadsheet.
The China documentary, I think, did 153,000. I'm scrolling to find it right now. But, 158,000 the China documentary did, which is lower than any episode of just slightly lower than any episode of Dark Side of the Ring did. This is a 2-hour documentary, but as usual, as all the Dark Side episodes did, it overlapped the second hour of Impact, did not compete with the first hour. This is a two-hour documentary. That's the number for the whole 2 hours. Again, lower than any other episode of Dark Side. Did you watch the China documentary, Chris Gullo?
I did.
Did you? Enjoy it? Was it unenjoyable? Was it sad?
I mean, it was well done from the perspective of Vice, you know, taking what the previous documentary crew, which I did not enjoy, them and her manager and the way she was used and abused, and the problem is she always had, it seemed like when she had a falling out with WWE, from what I get from that, and I know but from what I understand is she really, wrestling was her family. She wanted to be part of that. But like all these people, I think were pulling her in a direction of, well, you're this big star, you can't go anywhere for less than $1 million. You need to be on reality TV. You need to be in movies, this and that. And like, in all reality, her life probably would have been down a better path if she would have been, okay, you know what? I had a falling out WWE. There's TNA. There's, you know, she was in Japan, but then she stopped showing up to bookings. Like, there's the independence. If she really made wrestling the focus and didn't surround herself around these Hollywood, you know, bloodsuckers, like, you know, it's tragic, and I really feel sorry for her. So, yeah, so, I mean, I did watch it overall. I think what Vice did with it was very good. They're now doing these, like, special Vice Versa things, it seems like, based on other shows. So, like, the Dark Side of Football they've been doing that I don't think has been good. But now they're doing one of these Vice Versas next week that's talking about how black quarterbacks are treated in the NFL. And that will be pretty interesting. And then we also got a announcement that Dark Side of the 90s is coming this summer.
Really?
Yes. Oh, man.
Is that what's going to go on Thursday night? Yep. On Vice? Yeah. I should mention, too, and someone pointed this out on Twitter when I was tweeting about the ratings or whatever. So Vice, and we've talked about this, too, in comparison, comparing MLW. I think maybe we were even talking about New Japan, you know, reportedly in discussions with Vice and previously their home being Access. Vice is in, I think we found something like 70 million homes versus Access is in 40 million homes. So Vice is in a better position to do higher ratings just because it's in significantly more homes than Access. While pointing out that Dark Side of the Ring is being viewed more widely by, I don't know, about 100,000 viewers, roughly, more so than Impact is.
Yeah, so, I mean, Vice, we've seen MLW on there. Now they're doing documentaries aside of Dark Side of the Ring about wrestling. They did, I don't know if you've ever watched Vice News. It's probably honest to me. It's like the most, other than maybe BBC World News, the most honest, like, news. And they do a lot of pieces, and they've recently done C-SPAN. Yeah, I know you're C-SPAN.
What about I'm wearing the C-SPAN shirt today.
They did a piece on RVD and his thoughts on how cannabis can help people and all that. So like, they're more wrestling is getting infused. No pun intended.
Oh, this is a good time to bring this up. I was on Instagram, okay, and I got served like one of these like wrestling news site memes. You probably know what I'm talking about. Just this stuff that shows up on Instagram, and it's Instagram, so it has to be like a big image, and it's almost like a meme. And it was trying to say that like WWE is now no longer fining people for using marijuana or something, right? Because if people don't know, so WWE has a wellness policy. Purportedly, they drug test people for numerous banned substances. They test you for marijuana. They do not count that as a strike against you towards suspension, but they do fine you. So I saw this suggestion, this supposed report that they're no longer testing for marijuana or punishing people for marijuana. And I looked at least according to the corporate website, under banned substances, or it's not under banned substances, but the marijuana rule is still in there. The weed tax, as they say. That hasn't changed on the corporate website.
I don't think it will change in any sports really until it's a federal legalization.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Yeah.
All right. So I know, kind of want to talk about median ages the last 6 weeks for all these programs. And we'll start with AEW Dynamite. The median age has been 49 years old.
The youngest, well, actually tied with the biography.
And Dark Side of the Ring. Go ahead. All did 49 for overall median.
Yes. This is at the last 6 weeks. So this is probably not. Would this be all the biography episodes? Maybe close to
I think like five of the six.
Yeah.
Impact Wrestling, 52 years old.
Yeah, usually older, so I think they're doing better than
that. Might be some of the Kenny Omega and being involved.
What's really happened noticeably is that the total viewership for Impact has gone down. It's kind of gone down to the right trend over the last, let's say, 365 days. But the 18-49 viewership has gone up. So I tweet these trends that I think we talked about this last week. Yeah, the total viewership is going down. So people who hate AEW enjoy saying that this relationship isn't working out. But the 18-49 audience is rising, and you can see that reflected in a younger median viewer than WWE's audience for their in-ring programming.
Most Wanted Treasures also did 49 years old. They kind of, going with, I'm assuming the audience from Biography, they don't all stay, but the majority of them stay. So Raw did 55 years old. SmackDown did 56, and NXT did 57.
Yep. Now, I know linear TV, I was talking to someone, a couple of people earlier this week, and they were trying to understand the wrestling business and the wrestling audience. And the linear TV viewer, I do not think is representative of the average wrestling fan. I think the linear, obviously the people you're using linear TV are just tend to be older, because people who are younger tend to be using other forms of media, and maybe they're following WWE through the internet, through their phone somehow. Got another NPS survey coming up where I'll be surveying people about the various in-ring programs. And I usually find through that the median response to that, this is something that's served out through a Facebook ad, which may be older as well, but nonetheless, the median age when I do those studies tends to be about 40. By the way, why do we do median age here? It's a math show. So why not just average age? It's not as if there's this huge variance among people's ages. People tend to die around the same age. It's not as if there's, yeah, there's people who are 30 and 32 and 33 and 40 and 279. It's not as if there would be one big number that would skew things, but maybe it's because of the sample. Nielsen is using a sample, so it doesn't want to, it's not like median income where, yeah, you want to do median income because you got millionaires who will skew it and give you a misleading result. But anyway.
All right. And so now we're going to move on to a live events update from Brendan Thurston. We should get a little dun, 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 dun.
So I did this last week, and I have all the screenshots saved from last week, the 13th. And then I did this again this morning, the 20th, just to see if there's any noticeable difference between any of these seating maps. This is, we're talking about now, AEW's return to touring, WWE's return to touring. AEW, we've got three events that are actually on Ticketmaster, a couple that are not. So we're only going to talk about the Ticketmaster stuff today. But Miami, which is their first event back on the road, July 7th, doesn't look great. It didn't look great last week. Doesn't look great this week. I had people telling me last week, well, they just reopened all these different seats because they removed the COVID restrictions and stuff. There's hundreds of tickets out here out of, you know, this is not a big venue to begin with. There's blue all over this map for AEW's first event back on the road. And I know it's Florida and I know it's Miami, but why is there so little interest in AEW's first event back on the road? Cedar Park in Austin, Texas, near Austin, Texas, doing much better. Not a ton of difference from 1 week to the next, but most of the seats are unavailable. There's a little bit of blue in the highest regions of the venue. That is on, when is that? That's the 14th. That's the second Dynamite back on the road. And then we jump to July 28th in Charlotte, where there's a lot of availability in the upper levels, but this one looks okay. And then jumping to WWE, where the trend is that the first events back on the road, especially the TV events, are doing well. But the further along the list you go, especially when it comes to the house shows, they're doing pretty badly. You can still get tickets for Money in the Bank. Mostly it's the really expensive tickets and the really high up tickets, but Money in the Bank is going to be pre-packed. The first Raw on the road. So the first actual event on the road we're not talking about here, that's in Houston. That's SmackDown, July 16th. That's doing well. We talked about that last time. The first Raw back on the road, it does look like they have opened the highest level. There are plenty of tickets available up there. But doing okay, this Raw in Dallas on July 19th. And then we get to the super shows, the house shows, the non-televised events that this media company is putting on. Lots and lots of tickets available for the Pittsburgh house show. Actually more tickets available this week than last week for Louisville. They must have opened up more seats and maybe there were COVID restrictions. I don't know if you're looking at this, Gullo, but you can see where there's rows and gaps between the rows in the last week image. And then in the this week image, those rows have been filled in with blue dots in a lot of cases. So a lot.
Interesting that they would open seats.
Well, I imagine rolled back COVID restrictions maybe in that area. So they were able to put more tickets on sale. But lots of tickets available for the house show in Louisville on July 25th. July 31st, Milwaukee, another house show. More tickets available this week than last week. Detroit, another house show on August 1st. I'm just looking at it right now to assess it with my own eyeballs. Looks almost exactly the same. Just tons of blue all over the place. Rosemont, just outside of Chicago, August 2nd, a Raw. More tickets on sale. It looks like they've opened up the upper level here. Most of the lower level is gone. So this looks to be doing okay, this Chicago Raw taping. Then August 6th, SmackDown in Tampa. A lot of tickets are gone this week that were not gone last week. So there appears to be some movement for SmackDown in Tampa. Then the house show in Fort Myers on August 7th. A lot of availability there. Gainesville. The following day, doing okay. The Orlando Raw on August 9th, a lot of availability. It looks like they've opened up the top deck. the Tulsa SmackDown, a lot of availability. They do not appear to have opened up the upper deck. Charlotte, more tickets available this week than last week. This looks like, in fact, fuck, I made a mistake in the PDF here. Did I? No. I made a mistake the first week. Anyway, there's a lot of availability for the house show in Charlotte. Yeah, that's the Tulsa image there. I've gotten here twice. Anyway.
Oh, I did read somewhere that it looks like AEW have sold more tickets than WWE has in Charlotte. I know that where that was coming from.
Look, I think these are a great Rorschach test for where your biases lie. Then they do kind of look like
impulse. I may have heard from that from somebody who read the Observer.
Yeah. Like, Dave thinks that they're right. Hey, look, they're running a lot of the same markets, and AEW is running smaller venues. Yes. WWE is running bigger venues, but you know, I think AEW is ahead of WWE. I don't buy that. I mean, we'll see what happens as we get closer here. Maybe we'll get actual numbers, but I don't believe that the first tapings, those couple first tapings, the Cedar Park, for AEW, and where is the second one? In Charlotte. So maybe they are doing better in Charlotte for a Dynamite versus a house show. That's possible. But I hear just a lot of excuses being made for whatever your preferred promotion is. And I think it's just, you can see where people's biases lie both ways here.
It's an August 15th house show. I mean, the way house shows go is there's not a lot of like attraction. Like, it's not going to be on television and all that. House show sales usually are better. I mean, I don't have this numbers, but for me, I buy a house show ticket the day of. And I think a lot of people do that around.
House shows don't sell as well. I mean, there's no question about that. Columbia house show, tons of availability, a little bit less than last week though. San Antonio Raw doing okay. Still some availability, a little bit less than last week. Phoenix SmackDown doing pretty well, a lot better than some of the others, especially for being this late in the schedule here. SummerSlam tickets are available for Las Vegas, the home of Nick Khan, WWE President Nick Khan, coming home to main event SummerSlam.
Local boy done good.
Yes, there's an article in local Las Vegas media this week. SummerSlam looks to be doing okay. There's some blue, probably among the most expensive seats. There's a lot of resale available, but SummerSlam looks to be doing okay. Again, that's in a stadium. It's not clear to me what the capacity is going to be. House show in Denver, more available this week than last week.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
SmackDown in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Just tons of availability. The arena looks empty at this point. Oklahoma City Raw on August 30th. A lot of availability. And Jacksonville, Florida, where perhaps the market has been saturated for wrestling on September 3rd when SmackDown comes there. Lots of available seats there right now. Maybe there's some that have sold. And then in Miami on September 6th, tons of availability for Raw on Labor Day. So I think there's, you know, the ones that are doing well, great. There's a lot that aren't doing well. Wrestling should be the beneficiary of pent-up demand as COVID is winding down, hopefully. And I don't think there's much of an excuse for the ones that aren't doing well other than people aren't that interested in the product, whether it's WWE or the ones or Miami that's not doing well for AEW.
As we speak here, it's June 20th, and you know, we do have those three July Dynamites. I would think we would get an announcement this week regarding late July, August Dynamites, you would think.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, especially now we're in that competitive market for ticket sales. Things are opening up. New York is fully open now. So, I mean, they did announce the USTA show, the Arthur Ashe, but
yes,
as far as a weekly schedule, hey, this is where we're going to be at until here, until there. We really don't have anything concrete.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving on to something that got you a little bit of Twitter buzz this week. I saw this thing shared from other people that I didn't even know listen to WrestleNomics or have interest in WrestleNomics, but it's you did a graph breaking down the wrestling Patreon industry.
A $2 million industry.
No one's ever done this. And yeah. Very, very interesting. When you break it down, I know you want to go to more details, but just to give people guide the ship, adfreeshows.com, ran by Conrad Thompson.
Yeah.
The number one in estimated, an estimated patrons, but it was at 3,336.
Yeah. As of, I think I did this on Thursday. I think I did this. 17th.
I think so. I see Jordan Grace commenting on it. I saw Conrad and
which is interesting because Jordan Grace's patron number is not visible. I estimated based on where the search was. There's two in here in the top 20 that are not. They do not publish their numbers, but I just sort of grabbed them. So you search wrestling, and they seem to be sorted in order of who has the most patrons. And so if there's a creator who doesn't have their patrons public, they're couched between, you know, they're between somebody who's above them apparently and somebody's below them apparently. And I just took the median of who they're next to, and you know, so I took that as I must not be that far off if she's willing to share it, or I'm too high. But there's four. So this is just a result of searching for the word wrestling on Patreon, which, as it turns out, would leave out the lapsed fan, because the lapsed fan does not have the word wrestling in their little bio where you're supposed to list like what you're creating. So and so is creating this, whatever, right? If you don't have the word wrestling in there, you didn't come up in this. But those who did, 440 of them on Patreon. Majority of them have less than 10 patrons. 56% have less than 10 patrons, in fact. So as I said in the tweet, many have hundreds. We now have 125 as of this recording. A few have thousands. The Fightful Select has really been amazing in its growth. I've been tracking that for before this. For the last few months, I've been tracking Patreon accounts that I feel like are kind of peers of WrestleNomics to get an idea of, you know, how big is the growth potential. And
post-wrestling is doing well, too.
Post wrestling is among the leaders. Yep. I have to ask, in the middle of this podcast, a couple times per recording, Chris Gull, we can see each other on video. He stands up as if I've just said something very offensive and he's walking out. What is going on?
I just popped my knee.
Okay.
This left knee isn't as good as the right one.
But anyway, what was I saying?
You were talking about how he uses a gauge to see growth potential. And
what I found is that like maybe a good measurement is sort of 2%, maybe 4% of your Twitter followers is a good conversion rate as far as predicting how much growth you can get, something like that. But yeah, Fightful has grown enormously over the last several months. I think Sean Rossap is doing a great job doing these little reports through Patreon. I think I don't think there's anybody doing a better job of being in touch with talent than Sean Rossap at this point. This is I think Ad Free Shows. That's Conrad. He's got all the talent, and he does a really good job. I've heard. I honestly haven't listened that much, but does a good job of doing research and preparing these shows and producing them. OSW Review. Have you ever listened to OSW Review, or do you know what that is?
I have not. I've seen it in passing, but I was very shocked.
I used to listen to watch their YouTube videos and stuff. It's Irish people being funny about wrestling. It's not bad.
I knew it was like Irish or England, but I just didn't know much about it.
Voices of Wrestling flagship podcast, which this podcast is a member of their free podcast feed. They're doing really well. 700 patrons for their Patreon.
I am a fan of Brian Zane does. So seeing Wrestling Regret do pretty good. 680 Danhausen. Always love me some Danhausen. 610,000. I saw or 610 overall. So yeah, I mean, it, some of these surprise me, but some of these like don't surprise me. I mean,
I think one of the morals of this story is that, I'm aware of some people who, are sort of discouraged about their lack of growth on Patreon sometimes, but if you have more than 10 patrons, you're doing better than most people. You're doing better than most people if you have more than 10. So, in that case, WrestleNomics is doing great.
We're growing.
Yes. I think so this sort of gets at one of my peeve issues where I think subscriber growth or subscriber revenues and direct to consumer revenues are more valuable, and it lends itself to better content, more informative, intelligent content than I think ad revenue driven businesses do. If you have a wrestling news site that is totally, or if you have a business that is totally driven, any kind of media business, I think really that is totally driven by ad revenue or mostly driven by ad revenue, you're more incentivized to just make people gawk and make people enraged. I mean, that this is what social media is. If you look at Facebook's revenue sources, it's almost completely ad revenue, which it's a really powerful tool. And I'm going to use it in a day or two to do this NPS survey. But when all of your money comes from the number of impressions you can drive, you end up inciting insurrection, for example. Or in the case of Twitter, as much as we use Twitter, and I think Twitter has been a very valuable tool for me personally, it also, as people know, it's a terrible place to have conversations a lot of the time because people are terrible on it. And the algorithms maximize enragement or confirmation bias. They serve you. It's in their interest to serve you what will make you engage.
I can't remember what that documentary was that was on Netflix that talked about that.
I've heard about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Google is another massive business, tech business, that's almost completely supported by ad revenue. And I think YouTube has done a lot to make people more stupid than they used to be. Even though YouTube, that's not to say YouTube is terrible, but YouTube is this really great platform in some ways, but in other ways, it's made people worse. But anyway, subscriber revenues. I think the Patreon, for one thing, when I first started to hear people talk about Patreon, there was a perception to the brand that this was like panhandling or asking people for money, begging people for money. And I totally got that. And I was kind of, feeling that way too. And I think over the last couple of years, it's transformed into being more of a subscription service. And I think what makes this powerful for people who are doing wrestling related content, like we are here, the more people use it, there's sort of a flywheel effect here in that the average person is using Patreon for at least one creator, the more likely they are, the more comfortable I think they are with subscribing to your Patreon too. And I think that's just going to increase over time as people who are, younger now become older and gain more income. They have more disposable income over time. These are the people who are going to be more likely to subscribe and to patronize a creator who's this sort of niche creator that's not this big mainstream personality or something. So I think this is a really good area to invest in. I shouldn't say that though. So don't compete with me. Turn off your Patreon, and you know, I want all the subscribers for ourselves here.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is creating extra content, something special for your niche audience, because not everybody, your overall audience, is going to be, you know, a patron. But like for me, like, you know, I've said it here before, I'm a patron of Between the Sheets, because I
just short of this list, by the way, just short of this list.
I love what they do weekly, but I actually preferred the deep dives on a certain topic, and it is kind of inspired my other podcast, you know. It's capitalizing on your niche, and I don't think it's making your non-niche audience go, how dare he put something over there, you know. And even like with ad-free shows, a lot of it is just early releases, you know. Yes, they do have a lot of other content now. They do, like, you know, shows with smaller shows with other people, and you know, they have, you know, live Q&As and stuff like that. But a lot of that is just like, hey, if you're such a fan of the Kurt Angle Show, for you could get it a week early, you know. And to some people, they want that.
Yeah, and another thing on the sort of the hard economics of this is, I think that the monetization rate when you're talking about a direct sale is so much higher than it would be for your monetization rate per, like, say, per user, per person. Think about trying to monetize YouTube. It takes roughly, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, in shows to come when we talk about YouTube views among wrestling promotions. It takes about roughly 1,000 views to make $1 on YouTube, right? It depends on, yes, I know, it varies greatly depending on the CPM. But it takes about, let's say, 1,000 views to make $1. So you have to, now granted, the who knows how much of the time people are actually spending watching, but let's say 1,000 people or even a few hundred people to make $1, you know, or off of one view, versus I'm getting one person to pay $5 a month, you know? So it's just, you're getting more money per customer, per viewer, per audience member, I think, this way. And I think, like, the Patreon stuff is especially useful for wrestling creators, because I think wrestling is an especially niche thing. There's not a huge, huge audience. In fact, the audience is perhaps shrinking over time, but there's this disproportionate passion for it. There's people who are, if they are into wrestling, there's a lot of people who are super into it. So I think that lends itself to subscription service versus consuming the free product that's supported by ads. So I think that's why I would imagine other forms of Patreon creators are, I would imagine the wrestling creators are disproportionate in their number, and perhaps in terms of their patrons too.
All right. We are going to move this train to the stock market. And after that crazy week of being a meme stock, back to reality here, as close on Friday, $57.83 for a share of WWE stock. So pretty much back to normal in that, you know, 53 to 58 area where they usually live.
Yes. Not a lot to say here, but W stock is totally back to reality. It's, in fact, so if you look at the Tuesday, which is the day before the meme stock, before the day before I woke up to a Reddit link in my DM box, it was it closed at $58.15 on Friday. It closed just below that, $57.83. So the meme stock bubble has burst.
All right. And we're going to move on to something interesting that you broke down this week, Facebook video viewing, and how, in comparison between AEW Glory Kickboxing, Impact Wrestling, WWE Network, UFC One Championship, and the WWE in general, for their Facebook videos. And no surprise on Facebook videos, WWE is number one overall for March, April, and May.
Yeah. over a billion YouTube views, or sorry, Facebook views. Is that right? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Facebook views over a billion. Now, a Facebook view is not equal to a YouTube view, which is what we're about to talk about here. A Facebook view, according to Facebook anyway, the trustworthy people over in Zuckerberg land, 3 seconds is a Facebook video view. A YouTube view, I think, is somewhere between 10 and 30 seconds at a minimum. So it's easier to register a Facebook view than it is a YouTube view. But anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it, AEW is, yeah, compared to this list, the lowest. And maybe something that you'll actually like look into. When they release of what happened on Dynamite and all that, Instagram gets a lot of it, and it gets it the quickest. So if you want to, like, you know, you're not watching Dynamite here, like, oh, what did Britt Baker do? It won't be on YouTube yet, because usually they only release one thing that night, and then the next day they start releasing stuff. I don't really go to Facebook to find AEW content. It doesn't frequently pop up in my feed. Instagram is where it seems they put a lot of their stuff. So it'd be interesting if you, start breaking that down to see where they are. It might still be towards the bottom of the list, but I think they do better there.
Well, the thing is, this is from Tubular Labs. They're doing YouTube and Facebook. They're not collecting at the moment Instagram. If I could, I would. I don't know if this is an intentional strategy on AEW's part. The big takeaway here is that, yeah. WWE's through the roof. Of course they are. But even in the comparison of Impact, AEW is now on YouTube. AEW is now exceeding Impact. And Impact has probably benefited because they have a 20-year legacy at this point. They have a ton of backlog library, right, which AEW doesn't have. But AEW is exceeding Impact in terms of monthly views on YouTube. But on Facebook, AEW is doing a tenth of what Impact is doing. If I go to AEW's Facebook page right now, they still do not have video highlights of Friday Night Dynamite as we record here on Sunday afternoon. I don't know if that's an intentional strategy. I don't know if that's just a lack of people on a social media team. I don't know if it's a lack of understanding or what, but yeah, I know other people in the who work in social media for wrestling companies who are just dumbfounded by what they're doing.
If we look at YouTube overall, and compares to AEW, I mean, they obviously seem doing better there. They're kind of in the middle of the pack when you compare them to Glory, Impact, One Championship, UFC, and WWE. And WWE by far,
I could not put WWE on the chart because you would not be able to read any of the other numbers for the YouTube
UFC chart. Right there, and still it's not even close where they are.
And just to go back to the Facebook video views, it is conspicuous that I think most of these players have can you hear the plane?
Yeah. So they're probably what happened was I just heard it like a few minutes ago, and it's probably the same plane that just went towards you. Because we're both, if you're still where I think you are, we're both located near water, very close to water. So that's where they're doing the whole thing.
Close
the Blue enough, Angels, yeah. Folks, for those of you, they're in Buffalo this weekend.
Yeah. Yes, there's a showing of air power by the water this weekend. Anyway, it's conspicuous that the Facebook video views for most of these companies has doubled or nearly doubled or maybe more than doubled over the last couple of months. And, I've been asked, well, did Facebook change how they measure video views? Not that I can tell. I've done some Google searching, but I can't tell. Who knows ever what is going on in the world of Facebook.
And you actually did a nice comparison between WWE and WWE Network, because they are two separate when it comes to the Facebook viewing views between March, April, and May. WWE does obviously better than what they're putting on the network there. But you'll notice, on my feed, the network pops up a lot of the old school retro stuff like that. But the network doesn't have stuff on YouTube, though. Just Facebook. Wow, those planes are getting louder and louder. Yes.
Oh, is that what I heard there? Okay. It's probably one on the way to me now. Our friends of the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Everything Elite, also pointed out that WWE is doing some stuff with TikTok, I believe. AEW, there is an AEW on TNT TikTok account that has basically nothing on it. People will like to point out that, well, I don't use Facebook for anything. I'm a 30 something wrestling watcher. I don't use Facebook's for boomers. But
TikTok is the TikTok new trend. I have a friend that actually works for UFC at the Performance Center in Las Vegas, and recently they asked all the people that work there to do TikTok videos for the Performance Center Performance Institute. It really is over there. Yeah. So that's been a growing thing in these companies.
Yeah. And I don't have any data on hand, but I was listening to the Lightshed podcast, which is Rich Greenfield and Brandon Ross, who covers W stock. And they were talking about how the watch time for TikTok overall is just soaring to the point where it's either exceeding YouTube or it's right next to YouTube, or, you know, it's the only thing that people are using. It's the only thing that YouTube is the only thing that's being used more than TikTok in terms of total watch time. And the audience is very young, right?
It's not just recently
when it comes to playing.
So, anything before we move on? I actually want to, before we go to the Tony Khan article, I have two small things I wanted to bring up because we can pretty much end with the Tony Khan article. First off, you actually had something on the Patreon, which is only $5 a month, about the NFTs that have been released for Jim Cornette and Bret Hart. Maybe not. Maybe you just shared something to me.
I have something on the Patreon.
I get
about
the emails. They're mostly Patreon things you share to me. Oh. No. Okay.
Oh, I forwarded you a press release that somebody
Well, folks,
sent
there
me.
Is nothing on it, but there's so much more.
tell the people what it's about.
So there's a company that is going to release NFT packages and tiers for Bret the Hitman Hart and Jim Cornette. And this same week, and I don't know the Jim Cornette.
I've heard of Bret Hart. Is he that person?
I don't know the logistics on this other thing that's been announced this week. Is it just a Patreon type thing? Is it a real cryptocurrency? But MJF coin was announced this week.
Oh yeah.
Me neither. Maybe. I just don't know what it really is. Is it?
I don't know anything about it. I've just seen.
No,
you're the one who traffics.
But
you buy it on
Robinhood out there that are just kind of joke crypto coins. There's like a poo coin, and and most of
that's how Dogecoin started. Right?
I would have to. It's a joke. I'll look to see if it really is on like a standard cryptocurrency trading thing for by the time next week. But yeah, if you want some MJF coin.
Yeah, I did see somebody post a line chart to show how it had grown in value over the short time that it's been.
It's good. It's that will start a trend. Yeah.
That's funny. I don't know. I people talk about how cryptocurrency is terrible for the environment.
If wrestlers can find a way to make money,
fixed, but yeah,
he won't be the only one with cryptocurrency if he does well. You know, and then WWE will get their hands in it. Yeah. And then, you know, it'll be RKO coin and like all this stuff. Also, too, we talked about the Cameo partnership last week. Yeah. I don't know if you saw this week on Twitter. Fans were posting their Alexa Bliss cameos that cost $600 from that new Cameo partnership. One was 25 seconds.
I saw this shared, but it was a video. So
another was 16 seconds, but most of them were like that. For $600, and she just like says hi. This is Alexa Bliss, or in her like childish gimmick thing, and you know, being
It's not childish. Speaking like this is normal.
Possessed child. and just like they said her name and she makes like a weird comment. Yeah. And then I think my favorite thing was she does one for this guy and she goes, "Oh, you're from Texas. I don't think I've ever been to Texas." And then it pretty much ends. And I'm like, you guys are promoting that you're doing live shows in Texas next month. Say something like that. Oh, we'll be in Texas next month. Do a little shilling, something like. The people, yeah.
And what
people
was the complaint that this was too short?
It's got very viral on Twitter that from what you get usually on a cameo from a wrestler, you get a few minutes. The prices are way cheaper than $600. And she's doing 16-second cameos for $600. And
I wonder if she was doing cameo before, and you can't do cameo days, and now she's getting a fraction.
Is this a WWE call? Keep it 30 seconds. Or is this a talent call? And they're like, oh, I'm only getting because are they getting their?
Who knows?
Are they getting their normal royalty percentages? And if they are, that's not a giant number. So yeah, so that's just want to kind of throw those little tidbits out with the cameo and the MJF coin and. Mm-hmm. The Bret Hart, NFTs. But big news this week in the WrestleNomics world was the Forbes article on Tony Khan and AEW. Yes. Titled, "Meet All the Wrestling's Tony Khan, the Next Lord of the Ring."
Mm-hmm.
Want to kind of read some of the wrestling metaphor quotes here. "His tone in the video came across as more tongue-in-cheek than pile driver," referring to Tony Khan's promo on Nick Khan. "Khan has shown little intention of crushing McMahon with a metaphorical steel chair." Mm-hmm. And then I think my favorite one was, "He would rather recreate the heyday of the Monday Night Wars and have a sleeper hold on wrestling as McMahon has for two decades."
Yes. In articles like this for other people who are involved in other sports or endeavors, are there puns like this? Why does and if not, why does wrestling always get this treatment?
I'm surprised it wasn't like Tony Khan's looking to body slam the competition.
Yeah,
we'll get into kind of the meat and potatoes of it on AEW profitability. Khan expects his wrestling division to be profitable this year, though an 8-figure investment in a video game development will keep the company in the red for now. And this line blew up.
Did it
on social media? Oh. Yes, from people that understood what he meant, understand the investment, and people are like, "Oh, this company, they're putting all their money into a video game and they're gonna go bankrupt and this and that." Like, people just can't take a step aside and realize that they're making an investment in a video game industry, which honestly I think they'll do very well in, and they'll make that money back tenfold.
Maybe the takeaway for me here is that this implies that AEW has not been profitable yet. Even though the Wrestling Observer newsletter has said that AEW was profitable after they made their January 2020 deal, where they renewed or extended their deal with Warner Media at a higher rate, now $175 million over 4 years, which is, as this article also mentions, 43 and three quarters of $1 million average annual basis. More on that number later. So AEW's not been profitable yet on an annual basis anyway. There's different ways you can cut up time, right? But on an annual basis, they've not been profitable, apparently. That's takeaway number one. 8 figures is a lot of figures. That's somewhere between what? $10 million and $99 million. So who knows how much money they're really investing there. A lot, though. More than $10 million.
But in reality, conversation.
Yeah, go ahead.
You could say that 8-figure number that we didn't really know that they got to move from TNT to TBS, they could basically invest that number into the, replace, if it's the same number.
I don't believe they're getting, you're saying that they're getting more money because they're moving to TBS.
Well, remember they said that that it was including an 8-figure number to move networks when Tony Khan said them. You don't remember that?
I don't believe they're getting.
Oh, you don't believe it? Okay, yeah, okay, yeah.
I literally find me the quote, and we'll consider it this week or next hour.
Yeah, but you continue.
All right. I was having a conversation with somebody months ago, and we were talking about the opportunities for I thought we were talking about the opportunities for WWE revenue growth. We're discussing the potential growth in the gaming space for WWE. WWE has a lot of valuable intellectual property, a lot of history of success. Well, sort of in the video game space, they still, they sell, I would guess, somewhere around $20 to $30 million per year in both console and mobile games. But lo and behold, it was AEW that was investing in video game space. So I think this is referring to the console game, especially. That's what was hinted to me. But maybe also the mobile games that they're working on. So the casino game has come out already. The two mobile gaming companies that they're working with are Crystalized Games and Comma Games. It hinted to me that is the smaller piece compared to the investment in console games. Yuke's is producing their console game. Do you have the quote?
It was not a Tony Khan quote, but PW Insider reported that it was making the rounds that it was an 8-figure payday from Warner Media to make the move anywhere between $10 to $100 million.
Yeah, that does sound familiar now. No, I don't believe that. Well, over what time too? On an annual basis? You're telling me they got a $10 million increase on an annual basis?
I'm not saying they did or not, but if they did
on a deal that's about $40 million per year, they got a 25% increase.
The point I'm trying to make is that the world is burning, or perspective that a lot of people are taking on social media because of this investment in the video game. It's not. I think they'll do well on that, and there is other areas they can replace that investment.
Yeah. I will say this. There's a tremendous amount of misleading information and incorrectly believed information about AEW's financial state that I think certain people in AEW are fine to have out there, and certain people who are writing about AEW and trying to get an audience to understand AEW just don't understand and don't know the finance details well, maybe don't know the math details well. And I think there's a lot of, it's not a publicly traded company, so who knows? And it's just a private company. So yeah. And I think it'll stay a private company despite fantasies you can have about it being a publicly traded company or something, or a SPAC. No, I think it's, and this is reflected in the pay-per-view numbers as well. Right. Everybody always thinks the pay-per-view numbers are X. I think they're X minus something. I think there's just a lot of people are happy. Certain people are happy to have this exaggerated view about AEW's performance out there. Certain people are not scrutinizing enough of the information that they're being given.
All right. And we had thoughts from Shahid Khan on AEW in the article. He said, "I absolutely didn't think this was a good idea," the Elder Khan says, "but I told Tony, look, when I'm dead and gone, I'm going to be leaving you and your sister a lot of money. Why don't you blow some of it while I'm alive?"
Yes. That's interesting to hear that Shad did not think this wrestling thing was going to work out. I remember hearing about this when it was in the works and thinking, well, yeah, any WWE sitting on their ass, spending lots of money and doing lots of big things, but the creative sucks. And look at the media rights values. They're going to grow over time too. And they are. And it's an enormous barrier to entry though. You have to have a ton of money and you have to have the sports credibility. I'll say something nice now after I said some harsher things earlier. You have to have the sports credibility. And Tony Khan absolutely has the sports credibility to get on TNT, for example, which is the biggest piece of all, probably.
All right. And other notes on it, the $43.75 million AEW received from TNT last year made up the largest share of its revenue, but that's a rounding error compared to the publicly traded WWE's record $974 million in revenue in 2020. Yeah.
Surprised to see the Observer not go through this with a fine-tooth comb this week. $43.75 million is the average annual value if you divide $175 million by four. I believe a lot of that money is guaranteed and escalating, just like the V's deals are, but some of it isn't. Some of it's ad revenue. So it's guaranteed and escalating, some of it. So that means it's lower in the early years, higher in the later years. So the money that they got, what does it say, this year, last year?
Yeah, so it was a large share of its revenue. Yeah, last year. It's comparing their 2020.
They probably got something more. Yeah, they probably got something more like $38 million or something like that, not 44. Because it's escalating. And I think there is this margin of ad revenue that 10%, you know, about 10% of it that may fluctuate back, you know, plus or minus of whatever is guaranteed. So more like 38, not 44. Not a huge difference, but not that.
And another note from the article, there's no reason why there only needs to be one wrestling company, Khan says, contradicting the act that he put on the AEW promo. The wrestling business is hotter now than it's been in a long time.
Do you believe that?
The money might be better, but the ratings isn't there.
I think it's more niche. No, I think it's more niche, just sort of like we were talking about with Patreon. I think wrestling is a space where you can get more and you get more and more money out of people, an individual person over time. You can get more money out of the average wrestling fan today than you could yesterday, and you'll get more out of that person tomorrow than you will today. And that's going to continue to be the trend over time. But wrestling, I don't know if you could make an argument that maybe it's never been as less popular than it is now. It's still tremendously valuable to TV networks because it's still quite popular enough to, for WWE at least, to demand. There's Vince McMahon flying in low on me there.
They were just by my house.
But anyway, as I was shouting, wrestling is still popular enough. WWE is still popular enough to demand hundreds of millions of dollars a year for TV rights fees for its core content. It's wrestling content, by the way. So it's more profitable than ever. I know we're still in a strange COVID time where who knows what ticket sales would be, who knows what merchandise sales would really be. But WWE is less popular, I think, now than it's been at any time in my adult life. There are more non-WWE wrestling products that are popular now, which is a very unusual thing. And that's largely a function of the fragmented media space that we increasingly live in. So there's a greater diversity of wrestling products available to the average consumer globally, probably. But more popular on the whole? No, I don't believe that. The biggest company in the world is in a multi-year decline across a number of its metrics that are tied to consumer revenues. And AEW's done an impressive thing by getting on network TV and getting a nice TV deal. It's not a huge TV deal, though, and their ratings aren't huge. Their ratings are pretty good, at least when they're not on Friday nights. But I don't see them as this, you know, they're not massively popular either, obviously.
All right. Well, with that, I'll get my plugs. Check out Chris Gello on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Things are getting busy in July. So, in July, I'll be doing one last live demonstration seminar for Excite Wrestling. And then July 10th, I'll be in New Jersey for NFW. But yeah, so it's going to be a busy July. And as far as the rediscovering the indie side of things, we are recording this week the last episode in the XPW journey and saga. Mostly going to be covering the trial, the reunion show, and the legacy of XPW. So you can check out RTI Pod on Twitter.
Who owns a tape library?
Rob Black, as far as I know. I want to look more into that because that is something that should be on IWTV. It really should. When the That's Our Mongo Twitter has been posting clips from it, and they've gotten tons of retweets. But yeah, so Instagram, Facebook, Rediscover Indies, RTI Pod on Twitter. So you look for July or June 30th will be our next episode. The last day of June. Go off the month with a bang for that.
You can subscribe to the WrestleNomics Patreon, which we've talked about a great deal here today, for $5 a month. For that, you get I've been doing ratings updates lately that are first reports. They're not first reported elsewhere. Here in the post Showbiz Daily world, where we have spoilertv.com, but it's it looks like they're only updating like once a week. They'll just do like a week at a time on one daily. But anyway, this week we've got a Ticketmaster seating maps for WWE and AEW for the patrons, which we discussed just now. But you can look at it for yourself. I've got ratings on the China documentary. I got ratings on Impact Wrestling, on Raw, SmackDown, AEW, Most Wanted Treasures. There's a notebook from last week. You get access to the WrestleNomics ratings tracker, WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, whichever you prefer. You can follow WrestleNomics at WrestleNomics. You can follow me at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Kello.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.